I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph by myself, Catherine Whittaker, and alongside me, David Law. And this week we are positioned on the most glorious patch of lawn in Putney. Can't think of any other P's to complete that glorious alliterative sentence, but...
We're basking,
yes. We record today with the audio backdrop of summer jollity, British summer jollity.
Yeah.
Just hours ago, David, on this very lawn, I was hosting a semi-ironical royal wedding party.
Were you?
Yeah, just over there.
How did it go?
It was great. It looks a little bit like Brexit threw up on my living room. There's quite a lot of red, white and blue bunting.
Right.
But much merriment.
So you didn't listen to my tweets telling everybody to turn it off and turn on the tennis that I was commentating on?
No, I mean, my policy on it, I mean, I'm not that interested in people I don't know getting married. I find it quite hard at the best of times to be interested in people I do know getting married, but I manage it. But anything that people get happy about is fine in my book, and any excuse for sausage roll, cake and bunting, David, is a good thing.
I've noticed that, yes. So, Rome tennis has happened.
Rome tennis has happened.
Although, just a minute ago.
Although I did. I mean, there is a legitimate tennis link in the Royal Reading discussion.
Yeah. There is.
Very, very legit.
Somebody who has won more Grand Slam titles than anybody.
Yeah.
Currently.
Serena Williams was there.
She was.
With Alexis Ohanian.
I mean,
she had a really good seat as well. She wasn't one of those ones at the back. She was on one of the front pews.
That wasn't on her excuse form, was it? For not being in Rome.
No.
Coincided.
I wonder when the invite... We need a really specific, detailed timeline of when the save the date came, when she replied to that, when she accepted the invitation, when she pulled out of Rome.
I want
details, Serena. I want details. Have you seen the pictures of her just chatting away to George Clooney?
Yeah. Well, you know, he was thrilled because, you know, now he's met a big star.
Everyone was thrilled. Apart from, I have a little feeling there's probably somebody that wasn't thrilled.
Who's that?
Who do you think probably thought they should have been invited and wasn't? And maybe when they saw Serena there, felt a little bit
initials
aggrieved.
RF.
Initials RF.
Maybe.
It's not often he gets slighted, but
no.
I reckon. He went to, what's the chops, Pippa. He went to her wedding,
yes,
unexpectedly,
didn't he? He did.
I can see you want to move on from wedding chat.
Did you know, incidentally, that I've been on the trail of Roger Federer today, somewhat?
Have you?
Yes, I've been trying. I decided this morning, I woke up and I thought, we're obviously going to talk about Rome. We're going to talk about the final between Rafael Nadal and Alexander Zverev.
We are, just to remind you, we are going to do that.
Folks, we are having that. And incidentally, Nadal has just won. You probably know that. And also, Elina Svitolina has got the title, beating Simona Halep. But I woke up thinking, I wonder what Roger Federer is actually doing right now. So onto Twitter I went, onto Instagram, onto Facebook.
He's trolling the palace for not inviting him.
Yes. So I thought, what is he doing? You know, where does he spend this 6 weeks of time? You know, does he go and just train in Switzerland?
Polishes his awards.
Maybe does that. Does he go off around the world? Because I know he...
People post selfies with him at, like... galas and stuff, don't they? Yeah. There's a fair bit of that.
Although he did do a major charitable thing, I think, at the end of April, but I've not seen anything of him since. He announced he was playing one of the grass court tournaments at the start of May on his Facebook, but that's it, right? We haven't heard anything about him, and I thought, when, you know, what is it now? It's getting towards the end of May. French Open's going to start next week. Has he got on grass yet? That's what I want to know. Has he started training? So I thought, I'm going to try and find out. So, sorry about the name dropping here.
No,
here we go.
I feel it coming.
I texted Ivan Ljubicic, who has steadfastly refused all interview requests from me for the last 3 years. And always ever since.
He really has been very committed to that policy.
I thought, yeah. I can get around this by texting him just a couple of questions for information, and maybe he'll just answer them without
thinking.
He
doesn't like to receive a stalkerish text from David Law out of the blue.
So I thought I'd do that, and lo and behold, he did reply, and he said,
This podcast has become just David Law reads text messages.
Yeah, well, okay, shall I not read it?
Go for it.
Okay, here's the reply. The gist of it, at least, is that I'm still not talking to you about anything because I don't think it's professional for me to do it. And he did also say, I hope your tears will not flood the entirety of London so we can actually play Wimbledon and try to defend the
title.
Hang
on a second, so you've got no news? An excuse to say texted him.
Then I decided to contact René Stauffer, who's one of the best and most experienced journalists in Switzerland. He said, I'm on holiday, leave me alone.
David, this is not a good segment so far. You need to up your game.
Then he said,
not good.
He said, I'm guessing you're somewhere in Switzerland doing physical work. So that's as much as I've got so far.
Should we move on?
Yeah. I tried.
Rome. David has hot-footed it from sort of Rome. I don't want to destroy the illusion that you've been in Rome commentating on the women's final. But you have been commentating on the women's final.
I have.
Between Lena Svitolina and Simona Halep. And I'm not necessarily saying I wasn't expecting Svitolina to win. I commentated a couple of her matches earlier in the week and was completely blown away. And, of course, she beat Halep in last year's final. I'm not sure anyone was expecting what actually played out in the final. 6-love, 6-4. Question mark over Halep's physical fitness. She did go off court early in the second set for treatment somewhere on around her midriff rib, but I think we need to put that to one side. I don't think so either.
She was, in the space of 2 days, she's played Maria Sharapova, and after the first set of that, Darren Cahill came on. As we know, so many of his on-court coaching assignments are just so fascinating with her. And fair play to her. She's honest, she's open. And she said to him on the court then, I just don't believe in my serve. And sure enough, she'd been broken 5 times out of 5 in the first set against Sharapova yesterday. Massive credit to her because she turned it around. As negative as she was feeling and as badly as it was going, she turned it around and beat Sharapova for the first time in 3 sets ever and the first time on clay. Today she came out against an inspired Alina Svitolina, who has beaten her in the final here a year ago in Rome, and also led her by a set and 5-1 at Roland Garros, but blew it, frankly. Choked a bit, Halep turned it around, did brilliantly and won that match. This one, Svitolina came out playing probably as well as I've ever seen her play. I didn't think Simona Halep had any feel on the ball. She had no form. She had no touch. She wasn't into it. And at the end of the first set, he came on this time and he tried to say, look, you've just got to work.
On, it was 5-love, wasn't it, yeah. I think? 5-love in the first set. Yeah, you've got to work it.
You've got to work. You hit 25 unforced errors in the first set. I mean, slight exaggeration, but that's what it was kind of like. And she said something to him to which, and I couldn't quite hear what it was, to which he replied, well, you're just going to have to work that bit out yourself.
Yeah, I desperately tried to scour Twitter for somebody out there with more attuned hearing than us that had managed to detect what Simona Halep had said prior to him saying that, and I couldn't find anybody that had interpreted that mumble.
Our investigative skills are a bit off this week, aren't they?
They are a bit. But yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. His interactions with her are always fascinating, but that one in particular, yeah, the way it ended, I always love the way they start, because a lot of coaching exchanges, as much as I as you know, I'm broadly in favour, although I'd change certain parameters to it. They are always fascinating. A lot of them make me really uncomfortable because I don't like the dynamics between the coach and the player. They really do make me uncomfortable. The first thing is he always says is, how's it going? Or how are you feeling? He always asks her a question first. And it sounds so small, but it's so important. So many of them just come on and spill out every little thought in their head and don't. And I know some of the players that are painfully sulky, sullen and uninteractive. They, you know, they don't even make eye contact, so asking them a question would probably fall flat on its face because they would barely even muster a response. But I really like that he does that, and I liked, as much as, you know, didn't turn the match around for her, though she did, she was obviously trying things in that second set, you know, I really liked that he just said, it wasn't in a stroppy way, he just, you know, very, very firmly said, can't help you there, that's on you. I'm not here to do everything for you. We're a team, I'm here to help you, but I haven't got every single answer. And too many of those coaching exchanges, it feels like I'm going to bring someone on that's, they're going to act as if they have all the answers and I'm going to act as if they can give me all the answers, and that's just not the case.
The frustration with Simona Halep is, first of all, she's incredibly likeable. I think she's great, and I love watching her play. I think she's a brilliant tennis player, and we know that she has a heart as like a lion when she's really into a match. I mean, look at what she did at the Australian Open: 15-13 over Lauren Davis, 9-7 in the third over Angelique Kerber. Had to basically be hospitalised after narrowly losing out to Caroline Wozniacki. And then the flip side is, I found about half a dozen matches over the last 12 months in which she's lost 6-love, 6-1, 6-1, 6-2, and just not shown up. And for the world number one to put that many matches in like that is really frustrating. And I don't know whether she'll ever overcome that element to her career.
How much was it about Svitolina today? Let's imagine that Svitolina that came out and just barely made a mistake for an hour and... Well, it was about an hour, wasn't it? Total. Let's imagine her against, I don't know, Petra Kvitova in Madrid form. I know this is, you love a hypothetical, though. It's usually me that doesn't. Or, you know, Maria Sharapova from the semi-final versus Halep form. Or, you know, one of these other top players on clay at the moment. How different would the scoreline have been? Because I personally think Svitolina would have beaten any of them on that form.
I'm not sure about Kvitova, because I think that what players like Kvitova do is they change the look of things for Svitolina.
Yeah,
they
true.
Take her out of her comfort zone. The really big hitters can just make her uncomfortable. They take her off that baseline.
Yeah, a Pliskova
position.
Or a Kvitova, yeah.
If they're really on, I mean, they have to be absolutely flying. But there are players out there with sheer brute power and shot making that can make Svitolina discomforted on a court. What I would say about her, I mean, she's always been a brilliant mover. At the moment, I mean, it looks like she has not left the gym for about 2 months. I've never seen the woman in shape like this. And there's, you know, there's not an ounce of fat on her at all. She's just so solid out there. And a different build, but a bit like the way Kerber came out at the start of the year. It's that they just put in such incredible hard work off. And I think it comes out then in how she views her chances, and she's playing that much more optimistically. She's going out there, and she really looked at Halep, and I heard this through Nigel Sears, who I was commentating with. He'd been speaking to her coach, Andrew Bettles, who'd said she really fancies her chances against Halep. She thinks she's got a bigger game, and that was what came across.
She did have a big game. It's interesting because you don't think of her as a power player, but there's something about the flight of her balls over the net. They feel like they, I know, sort of numbers wise and on paper they wouldn't come up as big as even as Halep, but there's something about the way they just stay hit. There's something really direct
about
them. I know
that's more on it now.
Yeah,
it's
it does.
Got spitting with spin, you know, and it just jumps off the surface, and she's just trying to hurt people now.
So she's yet to get beyond a quarterfinal at a slam. Will she make the semi-finals or better at Roland Garros?
Well, I think she will, but some of it, the reason I hesitate is A, because she hasn't yet, and B, because it depends on what sort of player she comes up against. And it's just the same conversation about Alexander Zverev. They're at very similar stages of their careers. Both have proved it over and over again at Masters 1000 level or Premier Mandatory or 5 in the WTA circuit. But until they can do it at the Slams, you can't say that they will.
Well, how about Zverev then? We just moments ago, David, watch him lose in pretty heartbreaking circumstances, having led 3-1 in the deciding set and then suffering two rain delays, one where they went off for an extended period and the covers were pulled over, came back out, I think it was 3-2 at that stage. Rafferty, after the first rain delay, Rafferty had come out, held one game, and then they were called off again. So came out 3-2. Zverev didn't win another game.
No, and that's what can sometimes happen with these rain delays. I think that that's something that he at the moment is probably pretty inexperienced in, that sort of circumstance, because most tournaments these days have a roof. You don't have these on-off situations that much anymore. And I think Nadal just played that. He just took that those breaks, said, right, I'm coming out with a different mindset and you're going to have to deal with me. I can only see positives for both players leaving that court, though, with that result. In as much as that's the first time on clay Zverev has hurt Nadal, and he found out that he can. That's a big deal to him. And it's just the run he's put together. Every time he played this week, I thought he was losing to Goffin. I thought he was losing to Cilic, and he found ways to win.
Is it too much tennis, though, for a guy who is fallen short over best of five up until this point in his career? Is it too much tennis in his legs? Because it's admirable that he's fought through it, completely admirable, as you say, but he's looked knackered for 6 or 7 days already now, and he could be playing again on Sunday.
I think it's definitely possible.
It could be very soon.
I think he has scheduled too much tennis in his calendar, given how successful he's been. The problem is you don't know how successful you're going to be. I suspect he will revise that in future years.
It's always going to be tough for him, isn't it? Because Munich is obviously his home event, so he'll obviously have to play the Masters 1000, so Madrid and Rome back-to-back, and Munich will always fall the week immediately prior
and
to
it
that.
It may have to go. At some point in his career, you know, other players have done that. Federer used to play Gstaad all the time, straight after Wimbledon. That doesn't happen anymore. So it may have to go. But I think that he is more vulnerable over best of five than he is over best of three. Simple as that at the moment. And with the tennis he's got in his legs, if somebody like Cioric did at the US Open, and it could be a player like Cioric that is just able to grind with him, take his legs away a little bit.
There's plenty of those out there.
There are still question marks over the legs of Zverev in that way, I think, at the French Open. So we'll see.
So is Svitolina going further than Zverev? I know they're not comparable in terms of the eventual result today, but bear with me. It's Svitolina going further. They're comparable in terms of the only level at which they're yet to prove themselves is at the Slams.
I think
who's going further?
They'll both make the semis. I mean, I sort of slightly reserve judgment till I see the draw, just in case there's somebody I think, actually. But
always with
right
a get-out clause, David.
You've
Lord.
Always got to have a little back door, haven't you? But what do you think?
Who's going further? Svitolina probably on the evidence of today, but you're right about the draw, because if she, you know, she could get Sharapova. Sharapova's not going to be seeded, is she? So you could get Sharapova round one, and I think Svitolina would probably win that, but she is the sort of player that could just play lights out and bully her off the court.
I mean, can we just say a word about Sharapova as well? I mean, the form she found in the last couple of days, and not even, I mean, Nigel Sears wasn't as convinced by her form as I was. I know what he was meaning, because her serve was missing a lot and she was hitting a lot of double faults, but just the appetite that she has for the game, I mean, crikey, you know, it was quite intimidating to watch the way she was going about it. As it's in her own way is Nadal like this just ravenous desire to get to the ball and pulverize it, and she's dangerous. She remains dangerous.
40 in the world, but I'm not sure that includes the points from this week in Rome.
No, it won't.
I don't. So TBC.
She'll be going up.
She'll be going up.
Certainly 30-ish.
Yeah, well, that's crucial, though, isn't it? Mm. If 32-ish or 33-ish?
Yes, I don't know.
We will check and let you know via the beautiful medium of social media.
Indeed.
Other notable, who's made a mark?
Djokovic. I mean, come on. The guy, we're talking about Sharapova, she sort of feels back now. So does he. I mean, there was a point where he had a great first round in Rome, and there was a moment where I did think, well, thing is, we've had this before where he's put together a great one result and then he's blown it the next round. This time he got his way through to beat Nishikori and play Nadal, and that first set was hanging on a knife edge. That first set he was doing to Nadal more or less a decent impression of what he was doing to him 2 or 3 years ago, and certainly living with him. Eventually he ran out of gas, but I think the omens are really good, because he was irritated and angry at things not going his way, but he also looked excited to be out there. So I was really encouraged on his behalf.
He did totally have a fire and a desire, which there have been flickers of. I'm not saying it hasn't been there at all since his return. That would be too simplistic a narrative. But it seemed to be more natural, that it seemed to be coming, flowing naturally, rather than him thinking, I'm flat, I've got to try and fire myself up. There was something instinctive about the fire in him this week in Rome, and I think the love they have for him there certainly helps. He's human in that, you know, back when I used to have issues with relating to Federer, and I used to say that I feel like all these adoring crowds, he sort of acts like, I don't need you.
Mm.
On the flip side of that, you know, Djokovic does need it, doesn't he? He likes to be loved. He likes to be liked, and he wants to be liked, and he, you know, I feel like I'm quoting the American Office. He wants it and he needs it in some respects. And I think at the moment he needs it perhaps more than ever before, and he certainly responded to it in Rome this week. But because he's shown flashes before and faltered afterwards, I'm still a bit reluctant to suddenly go, yep, he's back, because, you know, there was the Nishikori victory in Madrid, and then, you know, I just don't know.
I'm sure if we were to rewind the podcast 2 years, and it's all there in the archive if you want to go and listen.
Oh, goodness.
But if you went and listened to us 2 years ago, I reckon we were having this conversation about Nadal with Djokovic on top.
Probably.
And we were talking about how Nadal is showing flickers of looking like his old self, but is he ever going to get there, and when's it going to falter again? You don't feel like that now, do you? I don't, anyway. And I just feel as though, as long as Djokovic's body can stand up to it, The omens are really good. Signs are very good. Incidentally, quick note, something I read from Pat Cash on social media. I liked this little anecdote about Rafa. Remember when he told us about when he first played him, when he was a kid, thinking an exhibition?
Yes, well, what happened was he was supposed to be playing Boris Becker in an exhibition in Mallorca. I wasn't there. I've heard this. This is a classic Champions Tour story that gets busted out at every Champions Tour dinner that's ever happened. He was supposed to be playing Boris Becker he was playing Boris Becker at an exhibition in Mallorca, and midway through, Boris Becker went off court and he just got on a plane and left.
There was
a delay. Boris just got on a plane out of Mallorca and left. And this is the sort of thing that happens on the Champions Tour. They were like, we need some tennis to happen. What can we do? And there was this local kid that was around that had been hitting. I think he'd been a hitting partner with a couple of the players earlier in the week. I think he was 15 at the time. And they brought on Rafael Nadal. And I think Pat listens to the pod, doesn't he? So he will certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Pat still beat him, but he was pretty taken aback.
Yeah.
Pretty taken aback by how good he was.
He said, I remember going to my then sponsor and telling them, this kid is going to be huge, give him whatever deal he wants and sign him up.
Oh, so is Pat been on commission ever since?
Well, I don't think they did sign him up.
For the past 16 or 17 years. Oh, they didn't sign him up?
Don't think it worked. Maybe it didn't work.
Oh, heads have probably rolled.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cracking anecdote. It would be 20 times better if Pat were telling it himself. But you have to settle for me.
Yes, okay. Well, it's done now.
Is Nadal going to is Nadal going to win the French segment of the podcast?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
We'll have that conversation again next week in our draw episode.
Any other notables on the men's side before we move on? I know there are a couple of things we wanted to talk about on the women's side. Fabio Fognini.
Yeah. He showed flashes of his brilliance, and he hurt Nadal again briefly. And he produced a couple of brilliant performances, but yeah.
His body wasn't up to it, was it? He had one set of amazing tennis in him against Nadal, and then it all fell away. But do you know what that match made me think of in my sentimental missing Andy Murray state of mind? It made me think of the match that Murray played against Fognini at Wimbledon last year, and it just made me realise how extraordinary a victory that was for Murray, because Fognini was fully fit that day, and Murray, we now know, was a heck of a long way from fully fit. Yeah. He was in an extraordinary amount of pain and was doing a good job to be standing up, and Murray beat on-form Fognini. It was.
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah, we miss him.
Oh, well.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Anyway, moving on to happier things.
Yeah.
What do we got? You're the happiness correspondent.
Loads of stuff. Incidentally, can I just say, we were talking last week about Jim Courier's dead arm. Remember that? We were trying to work out what it was. Well, lots of people have written in response to that. A couple here. Tammy, a massage therapist from Victoria, Australia. So she must know what she's talking about. She says, great podcast. Dead arm isn't tennis elbow, as David suggested. Mm-hmm. It's actually a shoulder problem caused by hyperextension in the joint. Kim says, in California, dead arm is not the same as tennis elbow. Speaking as someone who has experienced it and being American, which seemed important in your conversation, it is more of a feeling that your arm is asleep and fatigued. There is not necessarily pain involved. I think
that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. Yeah. And somebody else wrote in to say it was the opposite of live arm, which I found very illuminating.
Carolina Pliskova, we better talk about.
Yeah.
And what was that umpire doing?
Well, the umpire, interestingly, got removed from further. So the situation is that Carolina Pliskova, just to give you a potted summary, was taking on Maria Sakkari in, I think, the third round in Rome. And she hit a smash. And it was very clearly in. Replay showed it was very clearly in. She felt it in. I'm not sure anyone in the stadium was thinking anything, but it wasn't in. But there, it was called out. It was quite close to the umpire. Umpire didn't overrule. Pliskova obviously asked for the mark to be inspected. Umpire couldn't find a mark. Line judge was then brought in to consult. Line judge said he couldn't point to which mark it was that he was calling out. Maria Sakkari sort of, not particularly firmly, but she did indicate that she was up for replaying the point, but for some reason the point was not replayed and it was given to Maria Sakkari. Pliskova lost it and lost the match, and then at the end of the match she went to shake her hands with the umpire, took her hand away at the last, and instead inflicted three absolutely deadly blows with her racket to the side of the umpire's chair.
Putting a hole in it.
Putting a massive hole in it, yeah. She could have done some serious damage to somebody in that mood. And, she has been sanctioned. We don't know how.
Yeah, we don't know the amount.
We don't know the amount. We don't even know necessarily that it's financial, do we? We assume it's financial.
Yeah, I think it is financial. I did ask the WTA. I was curious as to why they don't publish the figures, because
they say it's their policy not to publicise sanctions for their members.
I think that's a mistake.
I think it's unquestionably a huge mistake. I mean, it's a PR catastrophe.
Maybe not a catastrophe, but it's a mistake.
No, I am hyperbolising.
But the
WTA have done it. We knew what the sanction was for Serena Williams when she didn't go to press in Miami.
Did we?
Yeah, we did, because it was pitifully small. It was $4,000 or something.
Right.
We definitely heard what that was. To say this is our policy, I don't think adds up.
Yeah, I think it's something that needs reviewing, certainly, because what's to hide? Why not? I mean, you know, she did it very publicly.
Yeah.
She smashed her racket into the chair. So yeah, she needs to be sanctioned accordingly.
And you'd kind of want to hear what the thought process and the legal process is behind the sanction as well. Is it mitigated by the fact that she was in the right? You know, she did have a case, Pliskova. She had every reason to be very, very aggrieved. She just expressed it in the wrong way. I'd like to know what the process is for deciding upon the sanction. Does she sort of give an account of herself? All of that stuff.
When Fanini got rightfully absolutely the book thrown at him, financially at least, I mean, you know, at least you've got a sense of what the levels were that you were dealing with versus other things that might go on at tennis tournaments. So that's where this would be quite interesting. I mean, when I asked about it on Twitter about what people thought, I mean, crikey, there was a lot of opinion out there about it. A lot of people were really upset about her behaviour and felt that she deserved maybe a stricter sentence. A lot of people thought, you know, actually, no, the umpire was such an awful decision. And Christina Pliskova, her sister,
she was certainly taken off her. She was scheduled to do another match later that day, and she was taken off it. So whether she's been subject to sanctions or disciplinary action as well, I don't know.
Sid says, fine her. One match ban or two, but it was just the chair. Let's not judge her character over this.
But
enjoy the aggro, he says.
But hang on there, because I'm not judging her character, but there's an awful lot of other... We know that with incidents like that, intent is considered irrelevant. Look at Denis Shapovalov. He did not intend to hit Arno Gabas in the eye with the tennis ball. He was just hitting out in frustration and was unlucky with where the ball went. Tim Henman at Wimbledon. David Nalbandian. Intent is considered irrelevant. So... you know, I'm not sure that holds up.
Sherry says, about aggro, sure, most people like the odd racket smash, but this was too much. Not a good example for kids watching. Nicholas says, throw the book and make it public. No excuse for that behaviour. Scott says, I honestly loved watching some emotion from that woman.
Well, yeah, there is that factor, isn't it? That it was a real... It was like she'd saved up all the emotion that people had been challenging her to express over the past few years. Where's the emotion from Caroline Pliskova? Why does she care? And it all came out in that one moment.
Catherine, I mean, you know, we talk all the time about John McEnroe, and you know, how we sort of have a little smile to ourselves, and then you see some of these things, and at the time, they often feel quite uncomfortable. This is how I view it. I kind of, on one hand, love it, but on the other hand, at the time, my sense of what's right and wrong is makes me feel compromised, because I watch her do that and I think, no, that you shouldn't do that. But actually, then the other hand, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I feel very conflicted about it because I enjoy it in a guilty pleasure kind of way.
Yes.
But, you know, we should be denied a lot of our guilty pleasures, you know. So I think she has to be sanctioned. I don't know. It's as you say, it's very unscientific, but it's largely about feel, isn't it? And I can't get a feel for whether that, you know, without knowing what the sanction is.
Richard Ings, who used to run all the rules on the ATP years and years ago, and he's very experienced in the understanding of all this kind of thing, he says, the WTA policy of not announcing sanctions for on-court misconduct is deeply, deeply flawed. Pliskova's egregious misconduct was globally televised. She deserves public admonishment for her reprehensible and violent actions.
I mean, looking at it back, it's hard to deny that it wasn't violent. It was pretty vicious. I mean, again, I can find an argument for
laughing?
Kind of, if there's a job worth doing, do it well. You know, if you're gonna destroy some furniture,
I tell you what, it does also
$1,000 fine from the WTA for Serena Williams in Miami.
All right, okay. Well, I tell you what, it also does bring into focus is the Hawkeye and Clay argument. You know, does that need to come in? And most people have said, yes, it's time to bring in Hawkeye on Clay to just help out the umpire, and you have that back, and you don't have this situation of them jumping down out of the chair and looking at the mark and all this. Other people say, well, I like it old school. I like them coming down. Do you want to know who I've been texting?
No, I'm gonna.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway, I've been having a little chat with somebody who doesn't think Hawkeye on Clay would be a good idea, because he reckons that the actual technology involved would be shown up.
We do all know that there's a 2 millimeter margin for error in Hawkeye, so of course it would be shown up.
Sven Grunewald, the former coach of Maria Sharapova, said to me that call was so bad, I can totally understand the anger that Pliskova showed after the defeat. He said, in terms of the technology, he said, no Hawkeye for me, as it will show its flaws. We should have a technology specific to clay. And I believe that Fox 10 is developed in Spain and therefore a much better substitute. He said, I like the human element as well. He said, I wouldn't want to take away all of that. He said, I believe the technology should assist us, not control us.
Yeah, but I suppose there's an argument that along those lines of the assisting, that you could use Hawkeye just to because the majority of issues with line calls on clay centre around deciding which mark is involved. In this one, it was bizarre because they couldn't seem to find any mark at all. But you could use Hawkeye to assist you in identifying the correct mark, but then visually use the mark.
Yeah.
That you've identified.
I wonder what would happen if we played on clay and there was mark checking.
I'd win
involved.
David, I'd win.
Based on?
100% of our previous meetings.
How would you cope with on-court coaching? I'm trying to work out how you'd respond to that.
On-court coaching, I think that would be good for me.
Do you?
I think a pep talk. Yeah, I think I'd be like Simona Halep. I'd get really down on myself, and someone would come on and do a nice little mix of tough love and a gentle arm around the shoulder, and I'd be a new woman.
Right, well, we're not having that. So old school rules apply.
Another little sort of on-court rule thing that emerged in Rome this week was, in fact, I think it happened twice, but I saw it with Jo Konta when she was taking on Yelena Ostapenko. She tried to call Michael Joyce onto court, and she was informed that she wasn't able to do that because the umpire had seen Michael Joyce indicate to Konta that he wanted to come on. And then she asked, coach, 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 like that. And she said, no, I've just seen that he told you to let me on. And apparently that constitutes illegal coaching from the stands, and the request has to come in the first instance from the player, and she wasn't permitted to do it.
Same umpire in both of the stories, because the second one I think you're about to reference involved Caroline Wozniacki, who asked her father Piotr to come onto the court. But because he was on the other side of the court, he kind of tried to hurdle the perimeter fencing rather than coming through the actual designated entrance to the court, again, which you're not allowed to do. And this particular umpire, Mariana Veljevic, well, you wouldn't want
she's
to mess
with
her.
She's pretty feisty. I think she's cool.
I am not going to fall out with her anytime soon. And she was not having it in either case. And,
I've mentioned Ostapenko, David. Where does she fall in your list of what number down the favourites list is she for the French Open?
She is the ultimate sort of wild card into any draw for me.
Because it's not a number.
On form.
It's not a number.
On form, I mean, last year I wouldn't have put her in the top 40.
Nobody would have.
This year I wouldn't put her in the top 5, and yet she could. I wouldn't be that surprised if she won it. Yeah, for sure.
Top 10 for sure, just not top 5. Yeah, I mean, so around about 8, quarterfinals
my
type seeding.
My top 5, I think I would put in there would be Svitolina, Halep.
Kerber?
Kvitova.
Pliskova?
I don't know, maybe Sharapova, actually.
Pliskova?
No. I think it would be people have either won it before or so actually,
Serena.
You know Ostapenko might.
Practice, just seen a picture of her on Twitter practicing on Philippe Chatrier.
Straight from the wedding.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't put it past
Serena
her.
In there.
I think I would put Ostapenko in my top 5, actually. Yeah, just at number 5.
Is Serena top 5 or top 10?
No, she'd be between 5 and 10.
Between 5 and 10. So Ostapenko is above Serena.
Yeah, just about. I mean, come on. The woman has not played
a
match.
No, I'm not questioning it. I'm just enjoying you being punchy and giving me actual answers.
What else
can I ask you? I'd probably have Ostapenko 5 to 10. Just.
Okay. Who's your three at the top then?
Svitolina, Halep and... Yeah, probably Kvitova. I'd have Pliskova maybe. I think I have got a bit more time for Pliskova at the French than you do.
Yes.
Because I saw her beat Halep in Madrid, and I know it's altitude and everything, but she did what Kvitova did.
Tell you what was good on the old on-court coaching were the coaching interventions of David Taylor for Ostapenko and Michael Joyce for Johanna Konta. We found out so much about those relationships in those chats from the way Ostapenko engages with David Taylor. She really talks to him. She really wants to know, and she wants to sort of give her view, hear what he has to say about it, and then off they go. With Konta, it was like Michael Joyce was trying to slightly rewire her out there on the court and get her to stop playing safe tennis and kind of cast aside the doubts and the sort of fear of losing because she might go for it and miss. He was saying to her, you know, what's the worst that can happen, basically? You lose the next three games, we move on to next week.
Yeah.
Go for it, is what he was saying. Fascinating.
Yeah, well, you can completely understand that with what we know about Konta's psychology, can't you? Mm. She needs the pressure taken off. I actually think, as much as she doesn't love to play on clay, I think this period of the year could be quite good for her because she's just got absolutely nothing to lose. First round points at the French, you know, a couple of rounds will be considered pretty good for Konta, I think. I think hopefully she can go in there, pressure off. She will be seeded, she just won't be one of the top seeds like she's... been lucky to be for the past few slams, but I don't know, win a couple of rounds, you don't know, anything can happen. She's a set up against Ostapenko.
I think she's sort of playing with the house's money at the moment because she'd won, I think before that match she'd won like 7 clay court matches in her life. 3 of them have come this year, so she's already kind of doing better than she's ever done, really. Nobody expects an awful lot, and she's playing quite well.
Who's your 1-5? Okay, who's your 2-5 on the men's side?
It would definitely be Zverev as number 2.
Zverev number 2.
Yeah, I think
never
so.
Been to the second week of a slam.
No, he just looks the business to me right now.
Didn't he last year as well? Lost first round.
I'm telling you what I think. I think he's proved it.
I'm doing a law. I'm doing annoying devil's advocate.
The difference
questioning.
Is he's done it over and over again. Now, I'm still curious as to whether that will repeat itself over best of 5. But I'm not really convinced by anybody else. That's the thing. Dominic Thiem is not playing as well as he did last year. Stan Wawrinka is not a factor at the moment because he's coming back.
Djokovic?
Novak Djokovic, I think he's starting to play well enough. But I just don't think that there's enough miles in his legs.
Is he top 5?
Yes. Yeah, he'd be about five because I'm not that convinced by the rest of the field.
So who's number three? The bigger question.
I mean, I'd probably still go for team because he's got a bit of pedigree at that level. But I'm not that convinced by many players at the moment of having, you know, I wouldn't confidently say so-and-so is going to get to the second week. Do you know who I think is in the top 10?
Kyle Edmund, you're going to say, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
I'd put him top 10 as well. I don't think that's that big a stretch. If we're putting Dominic Thiem as number three, which I agree with you, I don't feel, you know, I don't feel like Dominic Thiem has a big chance of winning the French Open, and yet probably he is number three.
I mean, the thing is, Edmund could get a draw that puts him up against one of the really tough players earlier than would allow him to get to the quarters. But if he got anything like the draw he got at the Australian Open, I could see him getting to the quarters.
What about someone like Nishikori? You know, great win over Dimitrov, but falling short to Djokovic a couple of times now.
Played well against Djokovic, though.
Yeah,
look, he's playing
did.
Beautifully. Again, I don't trust
top five?
The guy's body.
No.
I don't trust him. Physically. Lovely player, but I just don't... And you know, Fanini plays brilliant tennis, but can you rely on him? Can you feel that he's going to do it?
What about somebody like a Cilic, semi-finalist in Rome?
There are chances there for these players. There's so many of them. I mean, it sounds as though Del Potro might not make it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pulled his groin and...
Desperately sad, yeah.
Miloš Raonic is out. There are so
Songa's
many
out.
Players
yeah.
that are out of this draw. The opportunity is knocking for people that you would never think of normally.
Who's the most outlandish person that we can think of that might have an opportunity?
I tell you what, I'm going to answer that one when the draw comes out. Give me the rest of this week. I need to think about it.
Dennis?
But Tsitsipas.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
has Tsitsipas more than Shapovalov?
I would say so. Over best of five, I think he's got an older body. He's a little bit more of a strapping
Does that mean
bloke.
Older.
Well, yes, but you know what I mean. It feels like he's more developed generally. Dennis still looks like a kid.
He does a bit.
You know, Dennis the Menace. That's perfect for him, really. And on clay, I just feel that Tsitsipas, generally speaking, has the better foundation to his game.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. What else you got?
I got loads of stuff.
David Law is clutching his phone desperately. What other text message threads would you like to read me, David Law?
Actually, to be honest with you, the first one, I've got two sort of any other businesses just for the end. What about Chris Kermode's quotes over the course of this week about the team competition debate?
That it would be insane. That was the quote, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
It would be insane to
Good
have both.
Chris.
He's right.
Yeah.
It would be absolute madness. And I like that he was sort of speaking on behalf of tennis there and not just on behalf
yes.
of the ATP, because, as you know, I find it... I find the division within the sport maddening. This week I ended up in rows on Twitter with people about the scheduling in Rome, and lots of people lazily saying, oh, you know, supply and demand, people want to watch men's tennis. But I genuinely don't think about tennis like that. I just want to watch a good tennis match. I don't think about whether I want to watch a men's tennis match or a women's tennis match. And, you know, I'd rather watch a good men's match than a bad women's match, and vice versa. And I think... the way that people think about it as men's and women's tennis is not helped by the way the administrative and organisational structures are formed. That encourages us to think about it in those terms, which is a shame. But anyway, diatribe over. I liked that it sounded like he was speaking just rationally on behalf of tennis.
Well,
it would just be madness.
Go read some of the stuff that Simon Briggs has been producing over the last week on the Telegraph website. He's done a big investigative report before he spoke to actually Chris Kermode, and the rest of the media did as well. Simon had already found out that the likelihood is that the idea of overhauling the entire Davis Cup to remove home and away altogether is likely to be shelved, in as much as they're going to try for a compromise. They've realised, he was saying, that home and away is still so coveted and so appreciated around the world that they need to keep an element of that in. The idea is that they would have a sort of preliminary playoff round in February in order to earn your places in this end of season competition.
It's great that they're not so wedded to their own idea, their own new ideas, that they won't make those adjustments.
Well, I think they realise it's not going to work, Catherine, to be quite honest. I think
there's a lot of people that arrogantly would do that and still bulldoze ahead because they've announced it and, you know, they're...
I think I might have said at the time that 10, 15 years ago, when the Grand Slam Cup run by the ITF was going on and the ATP Finals were going on, and you basically got two of these events at the same time. Eventually, sense was seen and they combined the two, and you've got what we now have at the O2. And that's what I think they need to get to here. I couldn't care less who runs it or whatever. They just need to make it bloody good and in the spirit of the Davis Cup, but something that makes more sense to everybody.
Dave Haggerty has also said that plans for similar reform of the Fed Cup are planned for 2020, which is, you know, further away than is ideal, but
we're getting
talking
there
in concrete terms, and it's the right kind of noises. Following the same theme as my last rant, it's a shame that it's not all being done together.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the right kind of noises.
Can I draw your attention to two more things before we sign off, Catherine? On this lovely sunny afternoon on Sunday,
that is the sound of a barbecue being wheeled away.
It is.
That's what you can hear.
It's quite nice to be a bit smug and have better weather than Rome,
isn't it? Just
I love it. Anyway. Draw your attention to a young British player who won a $15,000 futures tournament in Israel yesterday. Name is Emma, I think, this is one for the pronunciation police here, Emma Raducanu, right? She's 15 years of age. She played basically a seniors event. It wasn't a junior event. And she qualified for it and won the whole thing without dropping a set. I mean, that for a 15-year-old is pretty good going in Israel.
That's not even a name I've heard before. What's
Well, do you know what? I actually heard the name because I came into BT Sport yesterday to start the commentary, and I saw Nigel Sears for the first time in a couple of months. And I said, how are you doing? And he often tells me about maybe some young players that he's seen or that he's helping to coach or that he's might coach or something like that. And he said, you know, next week I'm going to meet a young girl called Emma Raducanu, who's not turned 16 yet, and I'm going to have a couple of days with her. I've not met her yet, but she's been brought to my attention by the LTA, and they're going to send her down to work with me for a couple of days. And he said, and she's playing this tournament in Israel. So I went and looked it up, and there she is winning the thing. So, you know, I've had a look at some of the video of her playing. I mean, you know, obviously a young player, but crikey, a talent. I'm very wary of talking about players like this on the tennis podcast and making everybody who does listen think, oh, I'm going to look out for that player, because I love doing that. Everybody, I love talent spotting in that way. I don't want to heap loads of pressure on this young player, but isn't it nice to sort of find out somebody that we haven't heard of is doing something, and she's British.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. The other one is total other end of the age scale. 36 years of age, Tommy Robredo has just won a challenger today, and he's pictured in tears with the trophy. Isn't that lovely?
Oh,
he's had horrible
injury problems.
Oh, good
on that man, he has.
And, you know, this is a guy who's been playing best part of 20 years, and there he is still getting that much out of the sports that he's, you know, he's got plenty of money, doesn't need to play. Let's hope that all of the other players that have had long layoffs, obviously thinking of Andy Murray at the height of that as well, can have their way to resume their career and eventually sign off on their own terms. That's all you ask.
I feel inspired, David, but also slightly depressed by the fact that Nirvana Unplugged seems to be being played over in Barbecue Corner
and
over
the
there.
The wine bottles seem to be empty.
The wine bottles are empty and they're playing acoustic Nirvana. So I think we need to evacuate before things start
the people who are
spiraling.
Having the wine in the barbecue do seem to have seen better days.
Yeah.
They're pushing 70.
Yeah. Welcome to Putney, David.
Yeah, and they're having a good old drink.
They're having a good old time. It looks like a meeting. It looks like a sort of British Legion day out, doesn't it?
Charming. It's lovely here, isn't it? I like where you live.
It's good. Delightful. It's very delightful. Nice. I think, David, that the delight is over for one more week.
I think it is.
But when we return, I'll be in Paris, and it will be our French Open preview podcast.
It will, and we'll be turning 6 years old as a podcast.
We'll be turning 6 years old, and last year on our fifth birthday, I really, really failed in my attempts to get cake, so that is my task for the week in Paris. So when we return, French Open preview plus cake, and we will also, I promise, have the promised La Manga Club competition due to no special reason other than our failures to get our acts together this week because the weather's been so nice. The competition is not quite ready to be revealed to the general public, but it will be unveiled next week.
Yes, it will.
But we still have our La Manga Club promotion for all Tennis Podcast listeners. TPODCAST18 is the code to enter on the La Manga Club website for 10% off all accommodation and tennis packages. We are brought to you in association with the La Manga Club, with TennisBalls.com, with Melanie Bowes and Triple S, and with Charlie the Ferret. And we'll be back next week in Paris.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.